Kuru. Just execute. Adhvarasya. Of the sacrifice. Uddharanam. Complete regularly. Hatasya. Killed. Bho. O. Tvaya. By you. Asamaptasya. Of the unfinished sacrifice. Mano. O Lord Shiva. Prajapate. Of Maharaj Daksha. Na. Not. Yatra. Where. Bhagam. Share. Tava. Your. Bhaginaha. Deserving to take share. Dadu. Did not give. Ku yajinaha. Bad priests. Yena. By the bestower. Makaha. Sacrifice. Niniyate. Gets the result. Translation. My dear Lord Shiva, you are a shareholder of a portion of the sacrifice. My dear Lord Shiva, you are a shareholder of a portion of the sacrifice and you are the giver of the result. The bad priests did not deliver your share. The bad priests did not deliver your share and therefore you destroyed everything. And the sacrifice remains unfinished. Now you can do the needful and take your rightful share. So there is no purport here. So we will read the translation of text 51, 52 and 53 and then the purport thereafter. Text 51. My dear Lord, by your mercy, the performer of the sacrifice, King Daksha, may get back his life. Bhaga may get back his eyes, Bhrugu his moustache, and Pusha his teeth. Text 52. O Lord Shiva, may the demigods and the priests whose limbs have been broken by your soldiers recover from the injuries by your grace. Text 53. O destroyer of the sacrifice, O destroyer of the sacrifice, please take your portion of the sacrifice and let the sacrifice be completed by your grace. O destroyer of the sacrifice, please take your portion of the sacrifice and let the sacrifice be completed by your grace. Purport. A sacrifice is a ceremony performed to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 2nd Chapter, it is stated that everyone should try to understand whether the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied by his activity. In other words, the aim of our activities should be to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just as in an office, it is the duty of the worker to see that the proprietor or the master is satisfied, so everyone's duty is to see whether the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied by one's activity. Activities to satisfy the Supreme Godhead are prescribed in the Vedic literature and execution of such activities is called yajna. In other words, acting on behalf of the Supreme Lord is called as yajna. One should know very well that any activity besides yajna is the cause of material bondage. That is explained in by the followers of Lord Shiva. Lord Brahma pacified by whatever destruction was caused by his followers. In Bhagavad Gita 3.11, it is said that all the demigods are satisfied when one performs yajna. Because the demigods expect prasad from yajnas, yajna must be performed. Those who engage in sense gratificatory materialistic activities must perform yajna, otherwise they will be implicated. Thus, Daksha, being the father of mankind, was performing yajna and Lord Shiva expected his share. But since Shiva was not invited, there was trouble. By the mediation of Lord Brahma, however, everything was settled satisfactorily. The performance of yajna is a very difficult task. The performance of yajna is a very difficult task because all the demigods must be invited to participate in the yajna. In this Kali Yuga, it is not possible to perform such costly sacrifices, nor is it possible to invite the demigods to participate. Therefore, in this age, it is recommended, Yajnai Sankirtanai Prayar Yajanti Hisumedasaha. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32. Those who are intelligent should know that in the Kali Yuga, there is no possibility of performing Vedic sacrifices. But unless one pleases the demigods, there will be no regulated seasonal activities or rainfall. Everything is controlled by the demigods. Under the circumstances, in this age, in order to keep the balance of social peace and prosperity, all intelligent men should execute the performance of Sankirtan Yajna by chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One should invite people, chant Hare Krishna, and then distribute prasad. This yajna will satisfy all the demigods, and thus there will be peace and prosperity in the world. Another difficulty in performing the Vedic rituals is that if one fails to satisfy even one demigod out of many hundreds of thousands of demigods, just as Daksha failed to satisfy Lord Shiva, there will be disaster. But in this age, the performance of sacrifice has been simplified. One can chant Hare Krishna, and by pleasing Krishna, one can satisfy all the demigods automatically. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 4th canto, 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Brahma Satisfies Lord Shiva. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatam Maham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudhiraye Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavatir Naishtiki. My dear Lord Shiva, you are a shareholder of a portion of the sacrifice and you are the giver of the result. The bad priests did not deliver your share and therefore you destroyed everything and the sacrifice remains unfinished. Now you can do the needful and take your rightful share. So before we begin discussing this section, which is pretty much the end of this chapter, a quick context of what leads to this conversation or what events lead up to this verse. So as you all know, Daksha performed a yajna. He did not invite Lord Shiva, number one. Number two, he did not keep any quota of prasad for Lord Shiva. Sometimes we may not invite someone. For example, if some event is there and we can't invite everyone, sometimes we still keep prasad for some people who could not attend. So Daksha failed to do both. Now, Sati could not tolerate this insult by her own father Daksha unto her self-realized husband, Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is a Mahajana. Other than the fact that Srila Prabhupada writes in many places that Lord Shiva is almost the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, out of her dismay and frustration and disappointment, Sati ends her life. Of course, she ends her life by sitting in a posture as per the Ashtanga Yoga process, and then through her breathing process, she exits her body that way. When Lord Shiva hears that Sati has given up her life, then all of us know the famous or infamous anger of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is so angry that from his hair he creates a demon by the name Veerabhadra. So this Veerabhadra, along with the other associates of Lord Shiva who are equally angry, they go and completely vandalize the Yajnasthali, the place where Daksha performed the fire sacrifice. Completely destroyed. Not only that, they also take off the mustache of Bhrigu Muni. They gouge out.
Half mustache.
So they gouge out the eyes of Bhaga. Bhaga was one of the persons who was along with Daksha at that point in time, and who was apparently raising his eyebrows, you know, when this insult was going on. So they gouge out his eyes. Also, they knock off the teeth of Daksha. And finally, Veerabhadra severs the head of Daksha. It's a pretty gross, you know, punishment. And after that, after vandalizing, after killing all these people, after injuring so many people, they return back to Kailash, where Lord Shiva is eternally present. Now, when the other people in the arena, who were also part of the yajna, when they witness this kind of vandalism, this kind of carnage, this kind of revenge, this kind of gross physical treatment, they are obviously very scared. Sometimes we also will get scared when something so gross is happening in front of us, so violent, then all of us get scared. So they also got scared, and in that mood, they rushed from the sacrificial assembly to Lord Brahma, who is the chief of all the demigods, who is the creator of this material universe called as Visarga. Now, incidentally, it is mentioned that Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu, both of them had incidentally stayed away from the sacrifice. They never entered the sacrifice because they knew that something like this will happen. So they stayed away. So when these people, they approached Lord Brahma saying that now we are very scared, what will happen to us? Now, what did Lord Brahma do? The first thing he does is Lord Brahma chastises them. He chastises them and instructs them on the transcendental position of Lord Shiva. He tells them that you have done this offense because none of you know who is Lord Shiva. Many times we deal with devotees not understanding their seniority or their realized position. We sometimes tend to deal with devotees very casually. Sometimes it happens that, you know, highly realized sannyasis come, or highly realized grihastha brahmacharis who are very senior leaders in ISKCON come. So sometimes just because they deal with us in a friendly way, or they are very unassuming in their demeanor, we start assuming that they are our friends, and we start dealing with them in a very in a manner which does not befit Vaishnava etiquettes. So unless you unless we hear about the greatness of some devotee or demigod or Lord Shiva himself, who is the senior-most of the demigods and as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unless we hear about these personalities, we can tend to take them casually and we can cheapen or marginalize their position. So Lord Brahma is chastising these people that you don't know who Lord Shiva is. And he is instructing them that how can you do a yajna and how can you expect an yajna to be complete and to give its result when Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu, the highest Vaishnava, has been dishonored and offended in your yajna. So how can you even think that this yajna is complete and this yajna will be pleasing to the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So Lord Brahma is chastising them and instructing them on the transcendental position of Lord Shiva and also on Vaishnava etiquettes, how to deal with such devotees. Now, not only does Lord Brahma chastise them and instruct them in this way, but he also helps take their case to Lord Shiva for pardon. Just like when the Govardhan pastime ends, Indra is very scared to face Lord Krishna. So Kamadhenu goes along with him. So sometimes when you have to take someone, then you take some other person along with you to seek pardon like that. Especially in Grihastha life, the husband has to seek pardon from wife, then take the child, son or daughter along. Like that. Okay. It's not my experience. Maybe it is. Okay. So all of them, accompanied with Lord Brahma, goes to Kailash Hill. Now, verses 33 onwards start describing the beauty of Kailash Hill. And that has already been discussed, so I will not belabor on that point. Now, as they approach through the beautiful Kailasha, to where Lord Shiva is sitting. And where is Lord Shiva sitting? They find a banyan tree, a very tall banyan tree, under which Lord Shiva is sitting. So Lord Brahma, along with all these people, they now come and take possession of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is sitting with his left leg on top of his right leg, in that way. And he is having a japmala in his hand. And lot of realized personalities are sitting in front of Lord Shiva. And they are not ordinary people. They are people like Narad Muni, the four Kumaras, all these people are sitting and hearing from Lord Shiva. So they see Lord Shiva. Now, when Lord Shiva in turn sees Lord Brahma along with these people in front of him, what does Lord Shiva do? He immediately gets up from his seat and he touches the feet of Lord Brahma. Now, this is far out. Lord Shiva touching the feet of Lord Brahma. So, as soon as Narad Muni and the assembled sages and the assembled people, they see this, they also go and touch the feet of Lord Brahma. So, Lord Shiva is giving the highest respect to Lord Brahma and he's showing the way in which we must invite a highly realized person and a very senior personality such as Lord Brahma. Verses 42 to 45, Lord Brahma glorifies Lord Shiva. So, there are many ways in which Lord Brahma glorifies. He addresses Lord Shiva as the controller, as the institutor of sacrifices, as the one who upholds the principles of Varnashrama Dharma, who upholds the principles, the rules which govern ascension to heaven, the rules which govern attainment of Brahman, the rules which govern attainment of Vaikuntha, and also the rules by which one is forced into the hellish planets. So Lord Brahma is glorifying Lord Shiva in this way, that you are the one who governs all these things. Now what is the goal? What does Lord Brahma ultimately want to do? What has he gone there for? He has gone there to placate the anger of Lord Shiva. In Hindi we say thanda karne ka unko. He has gone to cool him down, like that. Lest any anger is remaining in Lord Shiva. Because even little bit of Lord Shiva's anger is enough to finish the universe. So he's gone to completely placate him. So that nothing is, no vestiges of anger are remaining. So this is verse 42 to 45, this is glorification. Verse 46 talks of, Lord Brahma is talking about Samadarshi devotees. After glorifying Lord Shiva, he is saying there are many devotees who are samadarshi. They do not distinguish between this fellow and that fellow. They see Paramatma inside everyone. And they are spiritually realized. And very cleverly, Lord Brahma is bringing this point. And such samadarshi personalities, they have controlled their anger. Very cleverly he is putting that point. Okay. And in verse 47, he contrasts the samadarshi devotees with the others who are too attached to karma kanda, who are mean-minded and egoistic, who are always harsh in their words as well as in their dealings and behavior. And Lord Brahma says, on one hand there is samadarshi, on one hand are these people who do not have any control over their anger and who are very egoistic. And then he says, but already, my dear Lord Shiva, but already they have been killed by providence, which means you have already killed them, don't do anything more now. So, but already they have been killed by providence. So therefore there is no need for you to kill them again. So he is very cleverly introducing his point here. And then verse 48 onwards, he beseeches or requests Lord Shiva. He puts a plea to Lord Shiva saying, saintly persons do not take offenses of materialistic people seriously. Saintly people do not take the offenses of materialistic people seriously. Saintly people do not show their prowess or power. Saintly people do not show their prowess or power to counteract other people, because they are never bewildered by the illusory energy. The tendency to counteract through power is generally considered to be the mode of passion and ignorance. But because the saintly persons are never bewildered by the illusory energy, they are never subjugated by the three modes of material nature, therefore they do not fall into these lower modes, and therefore saintly personalities are not vengeful. So that is, Lord Brahma is now introducing that argument also. Slowly he is trying to, you know, convince Lord Shiva. And finally, in today's verse, which is verse 50, he finally comes to the point. And what is the point? What is the outcome that Lord Brahma wants from Lord Shiva? He is coming. We say, matlab ki baat. Now he has come to his original purpose. Okay. He says, this sacrifice of Daksha is unfinished. Sacrifice of Daksha is unfinished without Lord Shiva being offered his share. And even if Lord Shiva were offered his share, even if Lord Shiva were now offered his share, if Lord Shiva is not accepting his share, still that sacrifice remains incomplete. So two things have to happen. One, share has to be given and it has to be accepted by Lord Shiva. Of course, they have got Lord Shiva's share for him. It's pretty implicit, you know, in these verses. So that is one, that Lord Shiva accepts the share. The second is, then in the next verses which I read some time back, he says, please revive Daksha's life. Please accept your share. Let the yajna become complete and please now give up your anger and revive Daksha's life. Why? Because Daksha is Prajapati. Without him there cannot be any progeny. Everything is stopped now. Right? So please revive Daksha's life. Number two, restore the eyes of Bhaga. And number three, which is what has intrigued me, I searched everywhere, I could not find why this request was there. Restore the mustache of Rugumuni. I don't know why it is so important, that half mustache. Why? It was only taken. Yeah, but teeth I can understand. You could have always shaved off the other half mustache. That is what I was thinking. Anyway. And it would grow on its own. So I don't know, if anyone knows the answer, please tell. The mustache part I didn't understand. But revive Daksha's life, restore the eyes of Bhaga, restore the mustache of Bhrigu, and restore the teeth of Pusha. And also the general health of the demigods and the priests who have got injured in this whole melee that happened. So these are the requests, two requests. One is, please accept your share of the sacrifice. Number two, please restore these people to their original conditions. And in the next verse, again he repeats, O destroyer of the sacrifice, please take your portion of the sacrifice and let the sacrifice be completed by your grace. Now, there are many key points and lessons from this section, and especially the purport which Srila Prabhupada gives. It's brilliant to see how Srila Prabhupada utilizes, goes through this whole pastime and then gives a very, very apt purport for all of us. So, what are some of the key points? So, there are around five key points that when I was studying this section, I put, and any of, if there are more, maybe we can add at the end of the class. The first key point that comes is Lord Brahma's affection for the demigods. So without having affection for each other, we cannot expect to go back to Godhead. We cannot expect to go back to Godhead just by the dint of our efficiency of services. Because at the end of the day, Lord Krishna does not see efficiency. He is bhavagrahi. And what does Lord Krishna see? Whether there is affection and love inside the heart. That is why it's called Krishna Prem. Krishna Prem means love. So unless a heart at the end of this lifetime, and unless our heart is full of love for Krishna as well as his devotees, then we cannot expect that we will go back to Godhead. Of course, there is a mercy quota which is there, it's purifying. So Lord Brahma's affection for the demigods is shown here. Now, who is Lord Brahma? Lord Brahma is the head of all the living entities in this material world. Specifically, he is the head of all the demigods as well. So, and in this position, he has got, in this role, he has got two responsibilities. Being the head of the demigods, he has got two responsibilities. One is to instruct these people, these demigods, on the right path, which is why he chastised them. Please understand, who is Lord Shiva? You don't know his position. He does that. He instructs them, chastises them, number one. And he protected them also. How did he protect them? He went on their behalf to Lord Shiva. So instructing and protecting. These are two symptoms of affection towards devotees. He did both very effectively. Because at the end of the day, the outcome was Lord Shiva was placated. So he achieved his goal. He made these people realize their folly and also approached Lord Shiva on their behalf and pleaded to Lord Shiva. So the compassionate nature of Lord Brahma as well as his character is revealed here. In devotional circles, it is often said that you have a right to chastise someone or instruct someone only if you have given enough love. So it is not that we are not giving love to someone and we are always instructing and chastising him. When we give love and affection to somebody, then automatically that person gives us the right to correct them. Without giving love and affection, then it just becomes, the whole relationship becomes one of senior and junior. It becomes very condescending in its nature, everything. And then such a relationship will not stand the test of time. Either the junior will throw back at the senior, or the senior will give up on the junior. Right? So there has to be always, there has to be love and chastisement. That has to go hand in hand. Just like a mother or a parent towards their children. There is love and then there is chastisement. And that chastisement is also in love, not out of material anger. So, we see here how the demigods also accepted the chastisement of Lord Brahma. They did not start liberating. Who are you to tell us now? No, they didn't start any of those arguments. They accepted the chastisement of Lord Brahma and agreed to go to Lord Shiva to beg him to accept his share of the sacrifice. So all this has happened because of the power of affection of Lord Brahma towards the demigods. So he was able to convince them because of that affection and take them all along the way to Lord Shiva and also protect them in that way. So that's one. Number two is Lord Brahma's sense of duty. here. Lord Brahma knew that for the smooth functioning of this material world, and that is his bottom line, Lord Brahma has the final accountability for running this material universe. One may say, okay, Lord Brahma is ultimately only the creator, but Vishnu is the maintainer. But no, even for maintenance, you have to create. And even for maintenance, you have to destroy. So in one sense, there is a lot of overlap. So we should not see the creation, maintenance and destruction as three different unrelated circles. There is a overlap. For example, as a part of maintaining our house, don't we destroy the unwanted things that are there in our house? So that is an example. So there is an overlap. As a part of maintaining something, we need to create something to be able to maintain something. So there is an overlap. So Lord Brahma, in that sense, has a responsibility for continued smooth running, functioning of the material world. And he is accountable. And for smooth running of this material world, Srila Prabhupada writes in this purport, there must be yajna. Yajna must be complete. If a yajna is incomplete, then the material world will not function smoothly. So Lord Brahma knew that it was his accountability to do that. He knew that a yajna is incomplete even if one of the invitees is unhappy or disgruntled or disappointed with the outcomes of the yajna. If the demigods are not pleased, there will be no rain. And when there is no rain, Mother Earth will not produce. What is that famous verse? Yajnyat bhavanti bhutani parjanyat annat bhavati bhutani parjanyat anna sambhavah. So only when there are rains, Mother Earth will produce food grains. And when will rains come? When demigods are pleased. When will demigods be pleased? Only when yajna is complete. So Lord Brahma knew that because this yajna has been incomplete, there is a risk of scarcity of natural resources that will occur in this material world. And he, having the ultimate accountability for that, he has now, out of the sense of duty, he says, okay, I'll come now and resolve the situation. Because there is a complete mess you guys have created here in this situation. Okay, so he comes. And it is said that even if one demigod is upset, the yajna is not complete. And here, who is upset? The chief of all the demigods, Lord Shiva, he is upset. So how does it matter whether all the 33 crore minus 1 are happy? Right? Lord Shiva is upset. So he knew he had to intervene. So though he originally stayed away from this yajna, which is what we mentioned earlier also, though he originally stayed away, now in this situation, he took a humble position in front of Lord Shiva on behalf of the people who he wanted to protect. So, two learnings we saw. One is the affection for Lord Brahma towards the demigods. Number two, the sense of duty and accountability which Lord Brahma had. Number three is Lord Brahma's appreciation of Lord Shiva's exalted position. That is another learning which we all learn from. To appreciate who is Lord Shiva. Now, how did Lord Brahma put his request? He did not just go and tell Lord Shiva, Haribol Lord Shiva, I heard that you are very angry, give up your anger, what's the big deal now? No, not that way. There is an etiquette. When somebody is so exalted, there is an etiquette in which you approach that personality. And Lord Brahma showed this etiquette even when Mother Earth, at the beginning of the 10th canto, you will find Mother Earth approached Lord Brahma saying that, I'm very scared because all these, third class leaders are ruling this world, they're exploiting me. So please do something. And what did Lord Brahma do? He took everyone, including all the demigods, to the ocean where Lord Vishnu was there. And then he started reciting the Purusha Shuktam prayers, glorifying Lord Vishnu. So the way of approaching senior personalities for any assistance is first go and say some words of glorification. And that glorification should not be just lip service. Okay, it should not be I scratch your back, you scratch my back. Not that way. We go with a genuine realization and a genuine understanding of who that personality is. And that glorification should come from the heart, not from the lip. So Lord Brahma, being a highly realized soul, he genuinely knew the exalted position of Lord Shiva. So then he is spontaneously saying all these verses of glorification, which was before this verse which we discussed earlier. So he does not put his request straight away, but glorifies Lord Shiva's exalted position and praises his good qualities. And thereby he teaches us the etiquette of approaching exalted personalities. So that is the third learning that we have. The first learning was Lord Brahma's affection, second was Lord Brahma's sense of duty, and the third was Lord Brahma's appreciation of Lord Shiva's exalted position. Now let's focus from Lord Brahma onto Lord Shiva, which is the fourth learning we get from this pastime. In this pastime, we also see the humble and forgiving nature of Lord Shiva. In fact, in verse 33, interestingly it is mentioned, that when Lord Brahma reached the banyan tree, one would have expected Lord Shiva to be fuming with anger. Sometimes when we come out, to our house also, we are fuming. How dare they did that to me, So, obviously one could expect that. But when Lord Brahma sees Lord Shiva, it is actually mentioned in the verse, Lord Shiva appeared to have given up all his anger. Okay. And he was grave and saintly, it is mentioned. Given up all anger, and he was grave and saintly. Just now all that rakkas has happened, and immediately, and he goes shortly after that to Lord Shiva, he is very grave and saintly. So, this is a Brahminical quality which every devotee is expected to cultivate, including myself. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a beautiful verse, and which we are discussing in our Bhakti Vaibhav course the other day. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 15, Text 40. This is when Parshuram comes back to Jamadagni and says that I have destroyed the entire Kshatriya race. And Parshuram's decimation is very famous. We all know. He decimated the complete race itself. And then kind of tells his father, now I have avenged the Kshatriyas. Obviously, in a Hindi movie, in a Bollywood movie, a father will say, very good. Tumne meri laaj rakhli. You have kept the honor of the Kshatriya race. My dear son, well done. But no! What did Jamadagni tell him? Jamadagni quotes a very beautiful verse. He says, Shamaye rochate Lakshmir, Brahmi sauri yatha prabha, Shaminam asu bhagavans, Tushyate harir ishwaraha. What is the meaning of that? It is the duty of a brahmana to culture the quality of forgiveness. What does a brahmana mean? Brahmana means to forgive. It is the duty of a brahmana to culture the quality of forgiveness, because the quality of forgiveness is as illuminating as the sun. And tushyate harir ishwaraha. If one forgives someone, who is immensely pleased by that? Lord Krishna. Tushyate harir ishwaraha. So when Lord Krishna sees that his devotees have cultivated a forgiving nature unto others, then he forgives us for our follies. We cannot be forgiven, we cannot expect to be forgiven, if we don't have the quality of forgiving. So it's a beautiful verse, and what a time. Jamadagni is quoting this to Parshuram when he is coming with all this anger. So here we see this forgiving nature of Lord Shiva. And in that purport of Parshuram Jamadagni, Prabhupada writes brilliantly. He says that Chanakya Pandit says that a kaku is recognized or becomes very glorious because of its sweet voice. A woman becomes respected and beautiful because of her chastity. An ugly person becomes very beautiful because of that person's scholarliness. A Kshatriya becomes very beautiful when he performs a heroic act. A Shudra becomes very beautiful when he is very faithful to his master. But a Brahmana becomes very beautiful when he cultures the quality of forgiveness. So forgiveness is the abhushan or the ornament of a brahmana. Because with hatred in our heart, we cannot sustain loving devotional service unto our heart. Even if we hate one devotee, we cannot go back to Godhead. Not possible. So we have to culture the quality of forgiveness. So we see that Lord Shiva has completely forgotten about this. He is very peaceful, grave. Now many of these people who are accompanying Lord Brahma were part of that Daksha Yajna. So Lord Brahma was also there, but there were other people also who Lord Shiva saw that these people are all part of the Daksha camp. But even though he saw them, he did not pounce on them, but rather he welcomed all of them with great respect. Those people who were also allies in one sense, in his own disrespect, but he welcomed them with great respect. Trinadapi sunichena taroriva sahishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadari. So Lord Shiva is showing by his example. Then he touched Lord Brahma's feet, seeing which other exalted personalities such as Lord Narada and the four Kumaras also touched Lord Brahma's feet. So the fourth learning is, we see the loving nature, the forgiving nature of Lord Shiva. And the fifth lesson that we see is the pragmatism of Srila Prabhupada. How Srila Prabhupada beautifully dovetails this whole pastimes and gets us into what we should be doing. Otherwise, sometimes when we just read Srimad Bhagavatam, we say, okay, very nice, all these pastimes are very good, but what should I do next? So therefore, Srila Prabhupada is bringing in that pragmatism in the final purport, which we read today. So, very brilliantly, Srila Prabhupada is relating this whole thing to the Sankirtan movement. How Prabhupada is doing that? We will not read the purport. We already read that. It's a very long purport. But what is the gist of that purport? Let us only discuss the gist. So, Srila Prabhupada talks about yajna. Now, what has happened here in this pastime? The whole ruckus is that a yajna is now incomplete. A sacrifice is incomplete because one demigod, the chief of all demigods, is very displeased or disappointed and he has been insulted, right? And because this yajna is incomplete and it has to become complete. Now, how did this yajna become complete? By Lord Brahma approaching Lord Shiva and requesting pardon from Lord Shiva, glorifying Lord Shiva. And therefore, by Lord Shiva's mercy, this yajna became complete because the share was given to Lord Shiva and eventually he accepted. And then people's heads and tooth and mustache, everything was restored. Right? But in Kali Yuga, first of all, can we perform such yajnas? And if we do such a mistake, can we call Lord Brahma, will he come with us? Can we go to Mount Kailash? Now, what? Mount Kailash is because we knew. What if, out of 33 crore, only 5% of the demigods are displeased? Do we even have time to go to 5% of the people? How many crores is there? I don't know. 5% of 33 crores is how much? So we can't do this. Neither we can perform such a yajna, neither if we have made an offense, we have the capacity to go to these kind of places like Kailash or summon Lord Brahma on our behalf. It's not possible. So Srila Prabhupada is very pragmatic. He brings the pragmatism here now. So what should we do now? Now, before we go to the essence of what Srila Prabhupada says here, we have to understand that there are around 6 or 7 items which are required for a yajna to be perfect. 6 or 7 items. What are those? The first item is mantra. The mantra has to be perfect, which means the recitation of the Vedic mantras as per their appropriate meters, that has to be perfect. If that is not perfect, yajna is not complete. Right? I'm talking about Vedic yajnas. So one is mantra. The second one is tantra. Tantra has to be perfect, which means there has to be sufficient knowledge in whoever is performing the yajna of following the four regulative principles. So mantra has to be perfect and tantra has to be perfect. Number three, desh has to be perfect. Desh means the place in which the yajna is done. That has to be perfect. The place must be appropriate. In fact, if the first 1.1 of Bhagavad Gita, when you open Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveta, Yuyutsava, Mamaka, Pandava, Seva, Kima Purvata, Sanjaya. In that purport, if you say, the whole battlefield was chosen because Kurukshetra was Dharma Kshetra. So that there is an importance to that place. Sukadeva Goswami chose a particular place to instruct Maharaj Parikshit for maximum impact. So for maximum impact of a yajna, place is very important. Mantra is important, tantra is important, and desh is important. Four is kal. Kal is important. Time. You cannot go to 12 o'clock and then perform a yajna. Now, in fact, in 10th canto it is mentioned that even when Nanda Maharaj went to at an inappropriate time, of course there is no inappropriate time for Nanda Maharaj, but for our understanding of Vedic principles, he went at an inappropriate time to take his bath, and then what happened? He was captured by Varunadev, and then Lord Krishna had to go. Of course there was a different pastime, there was a different purpose behind that pastime, but we have to understand that you can't do anything at any time. So, for a Vedic yajna to be perfect, then the time has to be very appropriate. So, there is mantra, tantra, desh and kala. And then, arha has to be perfect. Arha means, the recipient of that yajna must be worthy. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, we talk about charity in the mode of goodness, charity in the mode of passion and charity in the mode of ignorance. So, if the recipient is not worthy, then that such charity is also in the mode of ignorance. For example, if someone says, oh, can you please, I am a homeless person, can you give me, you know, $10, and then you give, and then say, thanks mate, and then he goes and, you know, smokes some, LSD, you know, Saint Gilda there. Obviously, what has happened? You also get implicated because you gave that fellow $10. Okay. Obviously, the $10 you can give because so that he can eat some nice prasadam, he can buy some, at least, if not prasadam, some vegetarian food. But if he uses that to eat meat and to take drugs, then the person who is giving charity is also implicated in that sinful activity. Right? Not only the person who is taking it. So therefore we have to be very clear where we give charity. Charity has to be given such that charity is ultimately beneficial for the person who is receiving that charity. Only then the Vedic yajna becomes consummate or complete. So there is mantra, there is tantra, then there is desha, then there is kal, and then there is arha. And then finally, it is said that there is vastu. Vastu means what? All the paraphernalia that are there, starting with the ghee. That is where the first thing goes wrong in yajna in India. We say, doodh mein milawat, what is that? Milawati ghee. You know? The ghee is adulterated most of the time, right? And it is processed in a factory. So you bring the ghee dabba, you know, produced by some Swastik Food India Limited. And then you are putting your spoon and then you are doing Om Swaha like that. Okay, so that is adulterated first of all, right? So the paraphernalia is not good, right? So you can't, with all these things in Kali Yuga, if we are expecting all this in will fall in place, then obviously we are living under illusion, right? On top of that, all the demigods have to be pleased. Not even one person must be displeased. Otherwise your yajna is not complete. It's a tall order. Can we do an yajna in Kali Yuga with all these things? No, we can't. Therefore, in Kali Yuga, everything is defeated. We don't know, what is the first one we talked about? Mantra. We don't know what mantra that Smartha Brahmana is speaking, first of all. Because we don't know Sanskrit. So whether he is doing, you know, he is saying the mantra of someone's birth, or whether he is saying the mantra for someone who is dead, we don't know. Yeah, very nice, very nice. What nicely he said. Very, what fluent Sanskrit was coming out of his mouth. But was he speaking sense or nonsense? We don't know. And we don't have the knowledge ourselves to understand that. So therefore, mantra we cannot control. Regulative offering, the tantra, knowledge of the four regulative principles. Now, I come from a South Indian, Tamilian Brahmin family. And obviously in my family I have seen many yajnas. The moment the yajna starts, that Smartha Brahmana sits on the yajna thing. Om, Om, Om. They will say, Mami, kapi. Which means, coffee leg yana. Kapi kantango. They will say. Yajna starts in India with the Smartha Brahmanas by the Brahmanas drinking coffee. If you go to any South Indian yajna or marriage, you will understand this. And they will be doing yajna like, actually I saw this yajna. No, like that. Swaha. Like that. Exactly, so I am not exaggerating. You have to see it to believe it. They are doing yajna here and they are drinking coffee. So the first regulative principle is broken there. No intoxication. That is gone. Right? So there is the mantra is gone and tantra is also gone. Within few minutes it is gone, of the yajna starting. Then the desha, the place. Now we have no control over which pandal we will get, which, what is that, even for weddings we have no control on over which marriage hall we will get. It's all driven by our annual leave. Then it is all driven by when that place is available. So sometimes you will get a place which is, which may be, you know, for example, when we did, recently we did one function, the only place we got was a Mayavadi, you know, institution, where we had to do, you know, some yajna there, but we didn't get any other institution, okay. ISKCON was also booked on that day, so we couldn't. So we may not get the desh. Kal, again as I said, the timing of when we do an yajna is depending upon our availability, the hall's availability, the priest's availability, right? And if both husband and working, both annual leaves matching together, children's exams, you know. So kala we can't decide. Kala is decided by so many other situations. Okay. Then, for example, you know, if someone purchases a property, let us say, and he wants to do some yajna in that property. So, somebody can see a calendar and say, these dates are auspicious. But sometimes you may find that the settlement date decides, you know, when the property is available for a yajna, right? So, we can't even do anything about kal. Then, arha. Arha means the people who are finally going to receive donation from that yajna. Who are those people? Usually, it is those greedy, smartha brahmanas. Okay? Who will just go on exploiting after that. Like that. Give him 10,000 rupees, give that fellow also. After that also, they are not happy. Right, so the recipient is also non-devotees, and then the vastu, which we already talked about, adulterated ghee or factory processed ghee. So with all these things, we cannot expect any yajna to be complete or consummate. We cannot please every human invitee also who comes to the yajna, what to speak of the demigods, right? For example, in one function which we did, the sugar was, you know, the kheer was very sweet. So one person was saying, oh, first class, very sweet kheer, beautiful, I've never had such kheer. Another fellow was cursing us, saying that I am a diabetic patient. How can you give me this kind of, what is this? How much sugar you are putting in the kheer? So you can never satisfy everyone in this world. We cannot satisfy the human invitees, what to speak of satisfying 33 crore devi and devatas. Not possible, right? So in short, in Kali Yuga, we cannot do a perfect yajna. And that is what Srila Prabhupada's purport is all about. Now this point beautifully comes across in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 23, text 16. And what is that pastime? That pastime is, Bali Maharaj has just consummated his yajna, his sacrifice. And what has happened in that sacrifice? Vamana Dev has come and taken away everything from him. Right? He has tricked Bali Maharaj and taken away everything. Three steps of land he has and took away everything. And who was the person who was opposing that whole thing? Who was the person who was opposing Bali Maharaj from giving to Lord Vamanadeva? Shukracharya. He was in fact the spiritual master, the guru who was saying don't give to Vishnu, like that. So obviously Prabhupada also right, such a person should be rejected, whoever tells you not to give to Lord Krishna. Now it is said that after Vamanadeva took over everything, Bali Maharaj also left the arena, right? After that Prahlad Maharaj was witnessing all these things, Prahlad Maharaj also left the arena, right? Lord Vishnu had a conversation with Prahlad Maharaj and he also left. And after that, who was left? Shukracharya was left there, still, in that yajna arena, along with other priests who were there. Brahmana, Smartha Brahmana, whatever you call these Brahmanas. And then what happened? By that time, Shukracharya had become realized. He realized this mistake, right? And Lord Vishnu teased Shukracharya. How? He asked Shukracharya, is this yajna complete? First of all, he took away everything. Then he is asking Shukracharya, is this yajna complete? You know, he is asking, taunting him like that. And then Shukracharya, realizing his folly, he says a beautiful verse. He says, what are you speaking, Lord Vishnu? This is complete. You are Yajnapati. You know? The goal of all yajna is you. Bhoktaram yajna tapasham sarvaloka maheshwaram. In Bhagavad Gita, they said, you are the beneficiar of all sacrificial activities that are performed. And you are asking me, after taking everything, is the yajna complete? How can it not be complete when the yajnapati has taken away everything and you are satisfied by this, right? And then he comes on to say this very beautiful verse, 8.23.16. He says, mantratas tantratas chidram desha kala arha vastutaha. Can you connect to it now? Because we discussed all this. Mantratas tantratas chidram. We talked about mantra tantra, you remember? Desha kala arha vastutaha. Sarvam karoti nishidram anukirtanam tava. Beautiful verse. It says that in this yajna, maybe because of all of us, the mantra may not have been correct, the tantra may not have been correct, the place may not have been correct, the timing may not have been correct, right? The paraphernalia may not have been correct, everything might have been imperfect. But because, my dear Lord, your kirtan was done here, which is what Bali Maharaj did that. He executed one of the 9 processes of devotional service, and that is Sankirtan Yajna. Because your kirtan was done here, everything in this yajna is auspicious. So that is the bottom line which Srila Prabhupada is trying to communicate in today's purport, to the last purport at the end of this chapter. That everything else being imperfect, if one thing is done perfectly, which is glorifying the Lord by loud chanting of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, then despite every other thing being imperfect, mantra, tantra, vastu, everything, the yajna becomes complete. And there is no chance that even one demigod, including Lord Shiva, will be displeased, because you have pleased the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When you water the root of a tree, you don't have to water the branches and the leaves and the fruit separately. Just by watering the root of the tree, nourishment is given to all the branches, stem, everything, leaves, everything gets nourished. So simply by worshipping Krishna, you have worshipped all the 33 crore Devi and Devatas, and by simply Krishna being happy, all the demigods are happy. So therefore, in this age of Kali Yuga, Srila Prabhupada is urging us in his purport that be very practical. You can't do these yajnas, but you can do the Sankirtan Yajna of chanting the holy names of the Lord. So that is the essence of this purport. And then what did Srila Prabhupada do in his own life? How did, when Srila Prabhupada inaugurated the Krishna Balaram Mandir, what did he do? Yes, he did invite the Smartha Brahmanas to do a inauguration yajna, who chanted Vedic mantras. But after that, what Srila Prabhupada said? Now all the devotees may do loud kirtan. And then even the Krishna Balaram Mandir was inaugurated with loud. So anything that was wrong in the yajna is now compensated by miles and miles. And the yajna becomes perfect. I was hearing a lecture by one doctor from Mumbai. And he said that, because he's seeing patients day in and day out, he says that day in and day out I see patients coming to the hospital with multi-organ failure. It is not uncommon to see these kind of patients. And he says when a person has multi-organ failure, he says that when the patient or his relatives talk to the doctors, each specialist sees the problem from his own perspective or angle. The nephrologist may see in one way, the whatever, radio, whatever, I don't know. Not a doctor, but whatever. Okay. So people will see it from their own. The dietitian will see from his own way. The skin specialist will see from his own way, right? So because people are seeing a situation in their own way, and sometimes they don't follow an integrated or a wholesome approach. They don't do a root cause analysis of the problem. Everyone sees it from his own silo, and therefore they try to solve this problem through a series of patchwork. And that does not ultimately result sometimes in the patient getting cured. Maybe some problems may get cured, but you are not attacking the root cause of the problem, right? So, he very nicely gave this, that similarly in this world, there are many philosophies that are going around. But no one comes to the root cause of the problem of misery of mankind. And therefore, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said that there is only one problem in this world. What is that? The lack of love of Godhead. People do not have love for God. They do not want to follow any principles, right? That is the only problem. If one develops this love for Godhead and dedicates one's life to serving the mission of Lord Krishna, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then one's life becomes perfect, and one need not then make any extraneous endeavor or a separate endeavor to solve other issues of this world. All issues will get solved with God consciousness or Krishna consciousness. So that is the summum bonum of today's purport. So I'll stop here. We still have 6 minutes, okay, for 9 o'clock. Okay. So today is Jagdish Pandit. I can see Mahatma Prabhu looking at me. So I know what is going to be your request. So in 3 or 4 minutes, we will just glorify Srila Jagdish Pandit. who is a very intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. So, Jagdish Pandit, it is mentioned in the Gaura Ganodesha Deepika that the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas took birth in Chaitanya Leela. Sure, all of you know the pastime of the wife of the Yajnik Brahmanas who gave prasadam to Lord Krishna and Balram when their husbands were still performing the yajna. So some of them took birth in this world in Lord Chaitanya's pastime, and Jagdish Pandit was one of the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas, as well as his brother Hiranya, who was also one of the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas. So just as Lord Krishna honored prasadam from the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas, Lord Chaitanya also liked to take prasadam cooked at the house of Srila Jagdish Pandit. Also it is mentioned actually in Chaitanya Leela that one day when Lord Krishna in Adi Leela, when Lord Chaitanya was very small, he used to cry. And when he used to cry, what used to pacify him? The chanting of the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But one day he was crying and he could not be pacified with anything. So finally when they asked him, what do you want now to stop crying? Lord Chaitanya said, and it was Ekadashi on that day, just like it is today. On that day also it was Ekadashi. Lord Chaitanya said that Jagdish Pandit, whose house is somewhere else, he is cooking rice in his house and offering to Lord Vishnu, go and bring that rice for me. I want to eat that rice on Ekadashi day. Only then I will stop crying. Okay. So then Jagannath Mishra, father of, he said, what is this? He said, you are asking rice on Ekadashi day. No, he said, I want that rice. But it is, and then he went to Jagdish Pandit's house and he consulted Jagdish Pandit. He asked Jagdish Pandit, who was his friend. So he asked Jagdish, my son is asking for rice cook which you have offered to Lord Vishnu. So is it not wrong on his part that, you know, he is asking rice on Ekadashi? So Jagdish Pandit is in turn telling Jagannath Mishra, because that person is not ordinary. He is Lord Krishna himself who is asking for rice. This Vishnu who we are offering to, he is the same personality. So you can take, there is no offense. Go and feed him this rice. So he takes it and feeds it to Lord Chaitanya. And then Lord Chaitanya is immediately pacified, having eaten rice from Jagdish Pandit's hands on Ekadashi day. The one other pastime that is there about Jagdish Pandit is about Lord Chaitanya instructing Jagdish Pandit to go to Nilachal, to go to Jagannath Puri to preach Krishna consciousness. So Jagdish Pandit goes there. And after he finishes whatever Lord Chaitanya ordered him to do, he is returning back to Bengal from Puri, Jagannath Puri. As he is returning back, he is feeling intense separation from Lord Jagannath. Right? And it is said that your visit to Jagannath Puri is only successful if you are feeling separation from Lord Jagannath on your return way back. Otherwise, you really have not got the mercy of Lord Jagannath. If you are just returning, you know, thinking about your next activity, then you have really not got mercy of Lord Jagannath. We must miss Lord Jagannath. Then we have got full mercy of Lord Jagannath. So he is missing Lord Jagannath. And therefore, he is saying, now Lord, how will I get your darshan? How will I worship you? So Lord Jagannath comes to him and then tells him, instructs him, saying that don't worry, stop crying. I will come in my vigraha form and you can serve me in that form. So, parallelly, what Lord Jagannath does, as much as he said this to Jagdish Pandit, he goes to the king of Orissa, okay, and he tells him that when you do the Navakalevara means when the wooden deity in Puri is changed, that is called as Navakalevara. When you do the deity change, the outgoing deity, which is called as Samadhistha Vigraha, the outgoing deity, you give it to Jagdish Pandit. So that is the instruction. And that is how, you know, Jagdish Pandit gets his deity. But Jagdish Pandit knows that Lord Jagannath is very heavy. It is not easy to carry. You know, so many people are required to carry Lord Jagannath.